Parshas Mishpatim is chock full, as its name indicates, one of the few parshas that has a really topical title to it. So it is a parsha that is filled with dinim and mitzvos and principles largely of ben adam l'chaveiro. So the parsha is filled with that, but not in Shishi. Shishi is an aliyah that takes on a very different tone. It's a very brief aliyah and does not have the kind of content that you find in the earlier aliyahs in Mishpatim. So it'll be a different type of discussion. It'll probably be relatively brief as we just look at the five psukim that make up Shishi of Mishpatim. They are from Perek Chav Gimel and they start at Pasuk Chav. So really it's a very different path all of a sudden the aliyah takes, the parsha takes. That after talking about a lot of mitzvos, then we're told, guess what? Hine anochi sholeach malach lefanecha l'shmorcha baderach l'aviacha l'amakom asher hachinosi. So, HaKadosh Baruch Hu relates that I will send an angel in front of you, and that angel will protect you along the way, and will bring you to that place that I have prepared. So, this is a little bit blue, I guess, so literally, figuratively, the whole idea of the angel here. And it's a topic of discussion, as you'd expect, what exactly is going on. Rashi has a comment here that this somehow tells us that in the future, the Jews are going to sin, and that that's what's being implied here. Right, Rashi's language, the first Rashi in Aliyah, Kan is Basru Shasid Machtor. That the future is going to be that the Jews will say, V'shchino maris lahem, ki lo ele b'kirbucha. That essentially this is a language of distancing. That God is saying, it's not going to be me who's going to be with you directly, so to speak, but instead there's going to be a secondary figure, a malach. So the Ramban argues on Rashi. The Ramban says this is not about sinning, that this is a reference to the malach that we read about with Yehoshua. And the Netziv, in his commentary, has a lengthy discussion where he says he doesn't think either Rashi or the Ramban is really perfect with the text. And the Ramban and the Netziv has a whole discussion about the imagery here, that the imagery that we find here and elsewhere is that the Malchus of the Rakia is like the Malchus of the Arab, that the kingdom upstairs is like the kingdom downstairs. And just like when it comes to a human king, so a human king very often has others to whom he delegates certain missions, assuming that Congress confirms their appointments, and that's normally the way he operates. And occasionally, the king will do something himself. The king will consider something significant, whether it's urgent or whether it's a matter of honor. The king will get involved himself. But even when the king gets involved himself, so then usually he's not alone. Usually there is somebody with him who's of a secondary nature. So we find different representations of a malach, of an angel accompanying a Kadosh Baruch Hu or acting in his representation, and that's essentially what these psukim are going to convey. The Gemara in Bava Kamma on Daf Tzadi Beis, the Gemara has a comment that when we were young, says the Gemara, then we were men. But now that we're old, we're like children. And to make that point, the Gemara points to this pasuk, which is a later pasuk, and to contrast it with the pasuk in Parshas B'Shalach, where we're told that Hashem will be holy with Nathan. So the implication is that it's saying that, oh, then we were people of stature, then God was with us, and now, as time has gone on, now we're actually regressing, now we're like little children, and instead of God being with us directly, he has the angel take his place. The Torah Tamima has a comment in B'Shalach, on the earlier pasuk. He quotes this Chazal there as well. This is, if you want to look it up, the pasuk in B'Shalach is in Perek Gimel Pasuk Chav Aleph. And the Torah Tamima comments over there, but he doesn't think it's about the angel versus God aspect. We find Malachim invoked in a number of places, and it's not necessarily always anything derogatory. But the point is the verbs that the Pasuk is talking about. And he notes that the Gemara, if you look at it, the Gemara Gama Kamma Dev Tzadi Beis, the Gemara quotes the entire pasuk, which seems to distract us a little bit. So he suggests that the point is, no, the language of the pasuk is relevant, because in Bishalach we're talking about halicha. We are people who are doing things. We are people who are accomplishing things, and God is joining us on that. While here, it says, L'shmorcha, it's as if we're children, as if we're not really active players, and God has to just protect us, not to get in too much trouble. And that's the focus, not necessarily the focus about the Malach versus God. The Aznai in the Torah, looks for Rav, has a comment over here about this whole progression and about Rashi saying that this shows that ultimately we're going to sin, and why is that? What's going on here? And why is that the focus? So he has a very interesting suggestion, which makes it all more positive, at least in terms of having faith in the future. And he notes that we have a premise, which is always a topic of interesting discussion, that God doesn't go back on positive predictions. If we're told that something is going to be good, so then that doesn't get reversed no matter what we do. While if we receive a nevuah of some type of disaster, so that is reversible. But if the Jews shape up, so then we could do tshuva, we could become released from that negative prophecy, so that's possible. So negative nevuahs are reversible, and positive nevuahs don't get reversed. But it's important to understand that that idea that positive nevuahs don't get reversed, that means specifically if it happens through a Navi. For example, there is the question that's brought up in the beginning of Parshas Vayishlach, that we're told that Yaakov was very afraid, even though God had promised him he'd take care of him. Nonetheless, he was afraid, and he thought that maybe he lost the merit, that maybe he garam achet, maybe he had not lived up to the tzidkus required for continued protection, and therefore he was afraid. So the question comes up, well, what about this promise that good things don't get revoked, only bad things get revoked, and even if we're no longer worthy, the good things are still going to come through. So here there is a discussion that the Rambam really explains why it is that good things don't get reversed. And he explains that it's basically because this is a part of how we figure out who is a real Navi and who isn't. Now, when it comes to Nevuah, there's an issue in the Torah of a Navi Sheker. And there is a punishment associated with Navi Sheker. So you could ask, well, how do you ever know who a Navi Sheker is? Somebody could claim to be a Navi, could make predictions, and when they don't come true, he'll say, well, circumstances changed. He'll make negative predictions, and he'll say that, well, they didn't come true because people did tshuva. Or he'll make positive predictions, and he'll say, oh, they didn't come through because people sinned, and they lost the zchus to have this actualized. So therefore, we have this guarantee because we need to have a way to verify who's the real Navi and who isn't. So if the Navi makes a promise that something good is going to happen, that becomes irreversible. That can't change. That, if it doesn't happen, that shows he's a false Navi. But we can't say the same by a negative prediction, because that won't be fair. If the Jews are going to do tshuva, so we need to have the ability to have that undone. We need to have it possible that Gezeirah can be wiped out. So a negative prophecy has to be able to change. But a positive prophecy, so that we are guaranteed that will continue, so that we'll know which people who claim to be Nevi'im are actually telling the truth. Hi.
Doesn't the Rambam list a bunch of different ways that we are able to tell whether Navi is lying or whether he's Navi?
Well, this is a part of his discussion.
This is
from the Rambam. That part of we know if he's telling the truth if he makes predictions that are accurate, and because negative predictions have to be changeable because we need the potential for tshuva, so that's reserved for positive predictions. So if that's the whole reason why positive predictions aren't undone, so for example, when it comes to Yaakov's fear could be because he didn't get his promise through a Navi, he got his promise through a Kadosh Baruch Hu directly. And maybe this whole idea that good predictions don't get undone, that's only true when you're dealing with a Navi. Because of this issue that we need to be able to ascertain which Navi is telling the truth and which one isn't. So here, says the Zayin Latorah, that's basically the deal. But Kadosh Baruch Hu says, I know you're ultimately going to sin. And if you're ultimately going to sin, so then you might worry, or it might be a basis to say, that the promise to bring you into Eretz Yisrael is going to be revoked. So I'm giving you a guarantee that despite that, it's going to have to last, because I'm telling you right now, through this whole speech, that there is a promise through Nevuah that you're ultimately going to be let in. So that's, in a sense, a guarantee. That's going to not be reversible because of that whole process. And that's what Rashi is getting at when Rashi says that we see ultimately that the Jews are going to sin, and that's why they need this guarantee. Okay, so to continue into the next pasuk, it says, Yishamar Mipanav, Ushma Bikolo, Al Tamer Bo, Kibo Yisar V'Kishachev, Kishmi V'Kibo. So regarding this angel, we're told, listen to him, follow what he says, and don't rebel against him. It's probably what Tamer Bo means, in the Lashon of Mered, Mamrim. Kilo Yisav L'Fishachem, he's not going to forgive what you do. Ki Shmi Bikerbo, because my name is in him. So that's an interesting phrasing. The Nesiv continues his whole mashal here about the human kings and the Melech Malchim Hamlachim. Says, just like when it comes to a human king, so if you have something done to an emissary, so let's say there's an agent to the king, so if you were to insult the agent of the king, if you were to disrespect him, so what's the consequence is going to be? So this agent of the king, theoretically, maybe could be mochel, but he can't be mochel if the king is standing there. That's going to be too difficult for him. So too, God is saying that here this malach represents me, but I'm going to be there too. So therefore, it's not going to be shayach for him to be mochel. Presumably, the other part of it is true also, that if the king himself was acting in his own stead, so then the king is the bailum to decide when to be mochel and when not. But if he is given his authority out to some type of an assistant, that assistant is not in a position to say, oh, well, you're disrespecting the king, so you're disrespecting me, it's okay, I'm mochel. So too, our potential is compromised, and that's a downside of this, that if we were dealing with the Kadosh Baruch Hu directly, so even though it's a greater chutzpah not to listen to God, but God could be mochel us, but his agent doesn't necessarily have that authority. This idea of Kishmi B'Kirbo, the Aznayim Latorah again has a comment that this is a reference to the Chayta Egel, that perhaps this whole idea is a reference to the Chayta Egel, which is imminent. That's also a discussion. But the Rambam explains in Mishnah Torah the way that Avodah Zarah got started in the world. That people in the generation of Enosh, they believed in God, but they thought that God farmed out his authority to the heavenly constellations and to other aspects of creation. And they felt that, okay, we have to also show respect to the sun, the moon, etc. And that eventually morphed into worshiping these items. So here God is saying, says the Zayin LaTorah, that here I'm telling you this malach is acting in my stead, so that could also morph into a desire eventually. You could ultimately say, okay, so I have to show covet to the angel and I should worship him. So we're being warned that no, that's not the idea, that Kishmi V'Kerbo is representing God, and that's not a step that one's going to take, that one's allowed to take, to allow that to transfer into worship. So can continue, Kiyam Shamoa, Tishmabakolo, but instead if you will listen to him, Yasisa, Kalasha Daber, you'll do everything I say. Vayavti es oivecha, Vitsarti es sarecha. Then it's going to be good for you. I will be an enemy for your enemies, and I will be the opponent to your opponents. I will take care of you. Ki Elech Malachi Lufanecha, because my angel will go in front of you, Vahaviacha. El ha'amori, v'hachiti, v'hafizi, v'haknani, v'hachidi, v'ayluzi, v'hechariti. So my angel is going to take you into confrontation with all of these nations, and I will cut them down. We'll be victorious. So the next pasuk continues, lo sishtacha ve'lo heyem, v'lo savdei, v'lo sasech ma'aseyem, ki hareis t'harseim, v'shaber t'shaber matzeloseyem. So you should not bow down to them, and you should not worship them, and you shouldn't do like they do, but instead you shall completely overcome them and destroy their avodah zarah. So here it sounds a little strange Right? So if we're just saying they're going to be destroyed, they're going to be vanquished. So why should we think that you would have a thought that you should worship their gods? They've just been defeated to show that their gods are not worship worthy. So why would that be the inclination of the conquerors? So this is discussed a little bit. The Sefer came out not so long ago, the past few weeks, called Shiurei Chumash of Rav Simcha Maimon, the Rosh Yeshiva in Israel. And he has a little bit of a discussion about this on this pasuk. And he notes that you have a similar phrasing in Sefer Dvarim in Parak Yibbeis, pasuk of Tasa, pasuk Lamed. And there, if you look at Rashi, what comes out is that it means the other way around. That not that we would think that, oh, because you have conquered them, maybe it's a good idea to worship their gods. But the point is that when you see how they are defeated, so that should emphasize to you that worshiping their gods was not the way to go, and that following their actions was not the way to go. And that's presumably what the pasuk is telling you, that you should see, you should reflect back on what happened to these nations and understand that worshiping their gods and following their ways is a bad idea. But then he goes on to add, however, it is possibly the case, and we have found this sometimes in history, that normally when one nation conquers the other, so you think, okay, so the nation that wins imposes its culture on the losing nation. But he says not totally the case always, and there is some influencing back and forth, and sometimes even the culture that is conquered ends up influencing the nation that is the conquering. So that's also a concern here, that you may take over this nation and you may think that you should let their culture influence you. So that's what the pasuk is telling you is not a good idea, not going to be a wise path for you. So then the last pasuk of this brief aliyah, the avadatem es Hashem Elokeichem, uveirach es lachmucha, v'es meimecha, v'hasirosi machala mikrebecha. So literally translate, you shall serve God, your God, and sounds like it means uberach, he will bless your bread and your water, v'asirosi machala mikrebecha, I will take away sickness from you. So there is some commentary, first of all, on the fact that the beginning of the pasuk is plural before switching back to singular. So the Aznai in the Torah has a comment here that because the word is Yavadatem, it's about Avoda, so that is to show the importance of Tefillah B'Tzibur. Okay, a little bit of a Musar Shmuz about Binyan slipped into the tense of the word. But along similar lines, but a little bit differently, the Leib Eliyahu has a, it's a Veli Lopyan, has a whole discussion here, which says the pasuk first starts off plural and then gets into singular, because it's trying to show that tefillah is something that addresses all aspects of life, whether it's ruchnius or gashmius. But tefillah also, we should appreciate that tefillah happens on a mass level. Everybody davens and they all daven together. But what actually is going on between the individual and the Ribono Shel Olam is highly variable. It is something that is specific to each person and their own schus and their own inclinations and their own needs. And he goes on to have a little bit of a discussion about how one draws spiritual inspiration towards dealing with all kinds of physical challenges. And he places that in the context of this idea that, yes, we're all davening, but what's going on in that process is highly specific, is highly unique, and therefore that's what the pasuk is conveying by switching constructs. Just a technical point of this idea of Erachas Lachmacha. So the Gemara Masachas Brachos and Daf Mem Hei in the Beis, the Gemara has a statement here that this is the source, or one of the sources. It's a whole discussion whether this is something that's rooted in Pesukim or not, but the idea of making a bracha before we eat. So Torah Tumima comments a little bit how the Gemara learns that of Erach is a little bit of a strange formulation. The Pasuk really just means that God is saying, I will bless. Sounds like it's actually Lashon Sivui, and that we should vocalize it a little bit differently, Ubarech, that you should make a bracha on your lechem. And the idea that it's your lechem, I think the notion is that that also represents, you know, the Gemara tells us that there is a contradiction between Lashem Haaretz and Loa, that God is over the whole world and the sky. But at the same time, we're also told the Haaretz Masal Adam, that God has given us the land and that which is in it. And the Gemara says, Kan Kodem Bracha, Kan La'acha Bracha, that before you make the bracha, everything is God's. After you make the bracha, then it's yours. So here are this lashon of lachnocha as your bread, but it's your bread because first you made the bracha on it, so that's a little bit the thrust here. Yosef Engel, that the idea is that it's a combination of recognizing that you make a bracha on it, and that it's yours, because it's yours through the bracha. So it's I think that's what the Gemara means. It could be that in the Torah Tamino when he talks about it, maybe he points in this direction a little bit. I don't know if it says it explicitly anywhere else. There is an interesting discussion that Yosef Engel has in his Beis Oser, where he points out that there is a medrash that is understanding this pasuk differently, the Sefrei in Parashas Eked, where it talks about God blessing us and blessing our bread, and that it keeps going, that at all stages of production, our bread is blessed by God, even after we've eaten it already, even after it's already in our stomachs. And at that point, where the Medrash quotes this pasuk. So it says that even when it's lach mecha, even when it's been eaten by you, then it's still blessed. So he points out that it seems like that's in opposition to this Gemara and Brachos, because the Gemara and Brachos is assigning this to before you've eaten the bread, to make the bracha, and the Gemara and the Medrash is understanding it as after you've already eaten the bread. So that seems to be a difference in these sources. And he has this in the context of the whole discussion, in case you were wondering, for whatever nafkaminas it has, if bread that has already been eaten is still called lechem, still has the status of lechem or not. So he connects it to a machlokas about the interpretation of this pasuk. Is this pasuk lach mecha, is it talking about before you eat it, like in the context of the bracha, or is it talking about afterwards? So we'll just end with a very interesting, perhaps especially contemporary, interpretation of the Aznayim the Torah of this pasuk. So he notes, others have asked this as well, but it's interesting. So first we're told, okay, you should daven, or you should worship God, and then he's going to take care of your food and your drink. And also, that he will take away illness from you. So some point out it's a little bit the other way around, probably. Presumably, we'd rather have our health first and then make sure that we have plentiful food and drink. And we're not going to be so happy with plentiful food and drink if we don't have our health to enjoy it. So that's a question some point out. So there's Nine La Torah, perhaps in addressing a notion like that, has an interesting spin on it. And he says that the idea is that sometimes because of people's health, they have instructions from the doctors. You can't eat this, you can't eat that. So you might say, well, it's great that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given me all this wonderful food and drink, but the doctor tells me I'm not allowed to have any of this. So to that, the pasuk continues and says, well, I'll take care of your illnesses as well. But HaSirosi Machal Nikirbecha, so I'll address whatever the medical conditions are, and then you don't have to worry, then you'll be able to fully enjoy all of that which I am providing for you. So this whole message of finding the Ruchnius in the Gashmius and recognizing how this is all connected to a Kadosh Baruch Hu's bracha, I guess it's an appropriate segue into Shabbos as we take the concept of Onik Shabbos as the focus and use this closing pasuk perhaps as a little bit of an inspiration and a force in that direction.